This podcast is a recording of the discussion at a meeting held at the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair on the 3rd of March on the topic of what sort of Ireland do we want. You can listen to the speeches that people are reacting to at www.wsm.ie.
Provoking contributions from all three, I think you'll agree. And what we're going to do is we're going to throw it open the floor for comments, questions, and maybe particular points you want to direct towards one of the speakers. There may be particular comments or questions that people like to make in general. Just ask people to keep their points relatively brief so that we can get as many people as possible in. Right, Con, yeah?
Just a quick question. How would anarchism, how would anarchism encourage people to go against McDowell, Kelly and Roberts in the forthcoming elections? I totally disagree with telling people not to actually vote. People should definitely vote and get rid of the wankers in Dáil Éireann. What we saw this week in Dáil Éireann is the wankers and Christian nonsense. What we actually saw in Dáil Éireann this week is an absolute disgrace with Cullion in a base in where a child was being abused by paedophiles. And the absence of Sinn Féin members in that debate, I want to totally condemn and say it was an absolute disgrace that not one Sinn Féin member stood up to McDowell or Berkey or Kenny or others. The next question is, will Sinn Féin join an allegiance with the right-wing front in Dáil Éireann? It is time that they told Bush on the 17th of March to go and fuck himself, that behind every Bush is a terrorist, and we are not running to the White House. That's why you two issues.
Thanks, Con. There isn't actually anybody from Sinn Féin here to answer your second question. Anybody else want to come in? Yeah, Con.
I think one question that all the speakers briefly alluded to, but I think the key one, and it's to do with uneven development. If we take it that radical transformation, such as all of us agree on, whatever role we think the slight differences, there may be big differences between us, we all, the end product sort of, we all agree on. But if we take that that's not going to happen spontaneously around the world at the same time, you know, I think that's a cop-out that left-wing, particularly, there's no Trotskyists here, so we won't mention this, but anyway. They seem to have like, let's find them. Let's take it that, you know, there is this kind of concept, I think maybe I'm wrong with some Trotskyist groups, but as well as other things, they're wrong with them, they put this idea forward that you'll have, it's as if there's something will switch, and all over the world it will happen. Now, I know where the sort of hope comes from, it's the worry of what happened with socialism in one country, etc., etc. But let's take it that we know that's not going to happen, that revolutionary change is going to be uneven throughout the world. And let us take that, let's say, in Ireland, the circumstances came right for us, and there was massive social change, whichever, well, it'll be messy and won't be like what we want it to be, but we can't predict it. The difficulty I have, this goes back to one thing Oisín said about it, and I agree with him, it's the answer I always give when people say this can work. I say, well, look at Spain in the 1930s, and look at Nicaraguan nations, and none of them are perfect. You look at Russia in the brief period when workers' control was really there. It's there. But the obvious lesson is also true. As soon as it rises up everywhere, it gets crushed ferociously, immediately. And why is that? Because, of course, the power of the example. So the question is, it's most likely that in any country if you have a revolutionary transformation, it would be fairly isolated. And that raises questions then that you could have workers' control, even of the most radical type, the best one that we want. And yet in England, or in France, or in the USA, you don't have it. In fact, I'd say that's a very likely scenario. And what, you know, then you've got a real serious situation. And socialists don't face up to this. I mean, social revolutionaries in general. What do you do then? Because they're not going to just stand and say, well, okay, you can have workers' control in Ireland, that's fine, just don't bother us. And this for me is one of the questions that maybe was touched on with people, but in arguing about how we get there. So people got ideas about that because it's fairly serious, and especially given our situation, you could have a radical social transformation in Ireland and not in Britain. And then you have a real serious problem. So where do we go with that one?
Well, I don't know, I'll answer it once. Dermot, then you start.
Well, there's a couple of things I want to say, but I'll be pretty brief. I like the fact that all three of you have come together to give us a talk, and I think it's good. I'm reminded of the kind of broad shortage that we're all coming from, because if you say you're Republican, you can be in the IRSP, you can be in RSF, you can be in Sinn Féin, you can be wearing an hour many suits, you can be painting yourself orange, you can be wearing a badge, you can try to desperately get yourself elected, or you can be an MEP, you could be fucking almost anything. If you say you're an anarchist, you can actually, you know, our church is so broad, we actually have people. But you could be so broad as to think that we have no need of tools, and you know, you could be a primitivist, then you could actually have all these arguments carried out on the internet. If you say you're a socialist, you've probably got Bertie Ahern in your ranks, actually. Going on his thing. But for me, one of the things that it boils down to, and I think it was touched by, is it David?
Don.
I think he touched on the whole thing about a certain naivety of saying, ignoring the existing political system. But I think that the whole thing of participation in the existing political system through the vote is a crucial one, and one that we should address here. And I think that it's difficult to do it in this environment, but it's something that we should push on. And I think that to say that you're actually going to get involved in that, to a certain extent, is a legitimisation of the existing social democracy. And also, we have seen, there's a certain naivety as well, to say that as an organisation, you get involved in that, and we haven't seen it replicated in other organisations, where the be-all and end-all then becomes the election of, you know, you spread your power base with a couple of more councillors, or you spread your power base with that. And I think that there's a certain problem with that. The other aspect is, we've been involved in campaigns consistently where this has always come up. It's also raising its head, or it shall raise its head, I'm sure, around Glasport as well. So I would think that it's something that we should address here and get it out of the way, because I think that what we are building towards is, to a certain extent, saying that the existing political system is inherently corrupt, and the participation of it is really a participation by, you mentioned the word charlatans earlier on, I think the charlatans are all running for elections, to be honest. And I'd like to see where Ivory's position is on this as well, because I think that what you have to do is you have to build a movement separate to that, and really what you're talking about is having conferences like things like this, or having major meetings and saying that politics is actually about self-activity, it's about DIY, it's about doing stuff by yourself, and it's about taking control of your own destiny in your own communities and being part of campaigns. It's not about asking people to trust you so that you can actually get in there for a while and you can change the system. Not even change the system, but you can actually, you know, get on that treadmill in some way, and then at some other stage pull back.
Thanks, Mark.
I just wanted to ask all three speakers really questions about goals, about basic goals. I mean, I actually live in England, but the parameters of my life are not that different from most people here or throughout Western Europe, so, which is, we live in a society where completely everything is owned, only not by us. So that means that I have to go out, sell my labor for money, which I then need to pay to rent, you know, somewhere to a landlord, to someone who owns a place where I live. And I'm asking about what do people mean by socialism, so on. Will there still be money, for example? Will I still have to go out and sell my labor for a wage? Will I still have to pay rent? Someone who never created the land that my house is built on or built the house either. These basic things are, so what does socialism actually mean to you?
Okay, what we do is we get a few comments from the floor, and then we get the panel to come back on some of those questions later. Yeah, yourself. Yeah.
Sorry, I just want to say something. The internal organizations of revolutionary groups, mass mayors on this building here, I was at a meeting with the Republican Army, not the Ukrainian Republican movement, and they were saying exactly what Eric was saying, you know. And that movement has since gone to evolve. I'm quite happy with it. But the weakness, and the inherent weakness, of even all Republican groups, is that because it's precisely because of the hierarchy, because of the history and because where they come from and where they're going, all the groups, all the Republican groups, including I presume Erie, either allude to or have an army in waiting. And by its necessity, that necessitates clandestine organisation, but also necessitates hierarchical organisation. And what that does is it disempowers, you know, it really disempowers. When they say all power corrupts, they're not just talking about by Adams and that's corrupt, they're not just talking about the leadership gets corrupted. The people below get corrupted too, because they're waiting for their initiative from their leaders who are supposed to know everything. Eventually they get lazy, the initiative, the start is disencouraged, and then eventually it's disarrayed. And you know, anarchism remedies that, because you know, nobody's relying on the leadership and to provide all the answers. People are encouraged to have their own forms of initiative, and so that's where basically I believe your organisation is going to fail again, like my old organisation failed. Just as regards the traditional left and their form of organisation, the argument that we hear for leadership from the left, it always tends to come from people in the leadership in the left, you know, and their excuse for it is always lessons from the past. I'm not a scholar, an anarchist scholar, but from what I've seen in a relatively short time in anarchist comments is the power comes from the fact, listen, we learn not from the past, we learn from what's happening now, from what's happening today, you know what I mean? So I don't think, I think the seed of your own destruction comes precisely from your insistence in having a hierarchy of leadership, because you're weakening your own ground base.
Can I just come back on?
I'll put you on the list now, because we've got four people from the floor that have indicated. Is that okay? And then you can come back.
Just on that point, Bill. Okay, go ahead.
Unless you want to make it very quick.
No,
I don't want it to come into a sort of a debate about whether or you have an army or not. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff, if you want, Jeff.
No, that's the way it is.
Okay. Right,
Andrew,
go ahead.
Okay, I was going to go back actually to the point Colin was raising about international revolution and hunting for Trotskyists in the room. I think that's quite an interesting one, because I think what's happened to the left in the last, particularly probably since the Russian Revolution, though you can see it beforehand as well, is you get a substitution of slogans for actually thinking about stuff and actually sort of discussing difficult issues. And I think that's a very good example of one. Because, yeah, the standard thing that gets trotted out is, oh, yeah, you know, there's going to be a global revolution will happen everywhere. And that doesn't sound quite convincing, although perhaps in some ways it's more convincing now than it used to be. But on the other hand, I couldn't see how you could actually have a revolution in Ireland that actually introduced anything even vaguely resembling worker self-management and communism without it being in a lot of other places. Apart from anything else, our economy, the way it's structured, is very tied into the global economy. I mean, you know, the simple act of workers taking over their workplaces would mean they're expropriating American firms, British firms, German firms. And you'd immediately have the question of intervention being thrown up in those ways, because, you know, Shell, for instance, would probably not be terribly happy about it, and would be, you know, they'd be saying to, I don't know, the Dutch government or the British government, or who they'd go to, but they'd say, you know, that's our stuff, we want it back, or you want compensation for it. So I think in the, you know, I also think there isn't a simple answer. This is basically what I'm saying on the other side, that somehow there's a program we can follow where we can have our revolution here and we'll be protected. Not everywhere's like that. I mean, I think one of the interesting things in the last decade and a half has been the Surigran Chattis with the Zapatistas, which was based on them, you know, seizing the means of production, i.e. basically the land, and dishing it out. And that kind of could happen because the rest of the Mexican ruling class really didn't care that much. They saw big landowners as this backward element, and while it was kind of annoying to have this happening, they didn't see it as threatening stability in Mexico as such, and in fact what would be required to crush it would be more threatening, because when they tried, you just got mass mobilizations everywhere else. So I think, you know, that's probably an example on the other side that, okay, you can have quite large-scale social transformations in certain conditions that can actually survive for a very long time in what look like impossible conditions. But, you know, and basically what I'm saying is I don't think there's a simple answer either way, and I'd be kind of wary of, in the ease of rejecting your kind of traditional Trotskyist position, that you seem to adopt, you know, that there is a more straightforward one the other side. Just one other thing I wanted to bring up was, I'm unconvinced by the idea that electoralism is something that can be used successfully without it actually transforming the politics of those who use it. Because I don't think it's simply a question of, say, social democratic parties becoming parties happy to manage capitalism, because yes, to a large extent, that was always a significant element in there. That's true. But in fact, you don't even need to look at socialist struggles. I mean, I think in Ireland, it's actually a lot more instructive to look at the Republican struggles, because we've seen, you know, several waves of parties that base themselves around republicanism and left republicanism that you can see getting into the door, or thinking they're going to get into the door, and immediately the party starts being restructured in order to make, you know, in order to make sure they get the votes, in order not to alienate people. You know, the Workers' Party is probably the most recent successful one in that sort of, you know, with the SDA and up in Labour. What's happened in Sinn Féin as well in the last few years, where the party's been visibly transformed with the point of making it more electoral. And really, I think there's a dynamic there that's much more than just the question of reform or revolution. You know, it's when you have a structure that's based on putting particular individuals as your figurehead, and the nature of electoral politics is you've got to put a lot into that, and then you've got to go to people and you've got to pretend that these people can make a big transformation. You know, you don't go around the doorstep and say, well, it's not really going to make any difference if you get our guy elected, but we'd like you to do it anyway, because generally people won't be motivated to go out and vote on that sort of basis. So inevitably you get into actually selling the system itself, selling the idea that it works. So I think the idea of the corruption of electoralism is a bit more complex.
Okay, I have seven names on the list at the moment, so if I could ask people to be a little bit set back, yeah.
This is another response to Colin's comments about revolution in one country or a global revolution or whatever, and well, Andrew's already probably covered a bit of the ground that I was going to try and cover, but just while Andrew points out that, like, you know, the globalisation of economies and what have you is something that's progressing and something that's making it more conceivable for revolutions to be, you know, not just national things. I think there's also an important historical thing to be factored in there as well. That, you know, the idea of a global revolution, that's not something that is just something that we're starting to be able to conceive of now. Like, a lot of the upsurges of the whole revolutionary era have been, like, heavily international and sometimes arguably global things, like the French Revolution, the American Revolution, 1798 in Ireland were all arguably part of the same process. You can extend that to 1848, you can extend that to 1905, and you can extend that to 1917, and you can pretty much extend that to 1968 as well. So none of these upsurges have ever been just within this national box, and I think when we think like that, that just shows how much like our outlooks have been colonised by this, you know, this fetishization of this state as king, you know, the framework within which everything happens, and that isn't just something that's becoming not viable now because of globalisation. That's actually never really been viable. But I'm actually wary of referring back to those revolutions all the time, because I think that's another debate of how revolution is going to happen. Is it going to be like those revolutions? Because maybe it won't be, you know. Because even anarchists, I still think in terms of, you know, this traditional idea of revolution as seizing power, and that was a kind of paradigm for all those revolutions. And I think that's another debate, whether revolution would be like that, or whether it be a much slower, gradual thing of building up counter institutions and what have you. But anyway, just go from
yourself, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to have an issue with you saying that if Ireland becomes sort of revolutionary situation, Britain doesn't. Hopefully in Wales will be. I was just going to say, it's obvious about, you know, talking about people in elections and so on. You know. In Brazil, there's a really interesting situation with the landless workers movement that's been existing for 20 years since the dictatorship, and they got out of all but five of the Brazilian states. They've run collectivist communities at various stages of development. Some are like little towns, you know, autonomously run. Children as young as 12 can take part in the decision-making process, and it's sort of delegated onto a regional and national level as well. And they organised a really massive march about 2 years ago on the Brazilian Parliament. But anyway, the situation in Brazil is that it's got a left-wing government, President Lula, and he's actually behind what they're doing. And there's a lot of forces in Brazil that are against it. The MST, or the Members Movement, will not actually come out and support any political party, but they do say on the public pronunciations, you know, if you vote PT, it's less of all the evils sort of things. So what's happening is they're performing these occupations, there's loopholes within the law that allow them to sort of take this land, and the PT is sympathetic to them. So there's a kind of dynamic going on that's favouring both things. But I think what you were saying about building up alternative structures and alternative sort of ways of doing things is the main thing. I don't think that, you know, you can simply rely on voting for someone to really change things. So I think it's a really, really slow process, and that's what seems to be going on there, and it is leading to genuine reform. But more importantly, it's actually making things that people live on a very, very collective-based one-to-one level, which I think anarchists, socialists, whatever, can all appreciate. You know, so.
Well, Andrew has actually responded to the question I wanted to ask both the non-ISN speakers, which is in relation to electoralism and the forthcoming election. I mean, I must admit, I do have a difficulty with the anarchist position, which is to essentially ignore representative democracy. And my difficulty is this: representative democracy, as it's developed in this country, as in Britain, as elsewhere, is the consequence of struggle by ordinary people. And it's not a case of us giving it legitimacy. In the minds of most Irish people, it already has legitimacy, and it is equated with democracy. Now, that is something that we want to move beyond. I mean, for us as socialists and as anarchists, or whatever political position we have on the left, we're trying to argue for a system of participatory democracy. For us in the ISN, that must involve democratic control of the means of production, because without economic democracy, political democracy will be washed away in no time, and it's of little relevance to ordinary people's lives. But I don't think you can do that by pissing on what people see at the moment as a democratic system. I think you argue with people that it's not enough and that we've got to move beyond it. But I remember a few years ago in Cork seeing stickers on bins. I can't remember what election it was, but there were stickers put on bins by anarchists in Cork who were probably good friends of mine. But the stickers said, "Put your vote, place your vote here." Now, you know, I can see the joke, right? And I laugh. But the reality is, the ordinary working class people I knew, my friends, all thought that was anti-democratic. It was a rejection of democracy, because from where they're coming from, the representative democratic system we have has been fought for. People died for it, and you know, it hasn't been the bourgeoisie of this country that put this framework in. It's been ordinary people, so it's valued in that sense. And I think, you know, when we talk about the current political structure, we need to bear that in mind. Now, how far we participate in that is another question entirely. The ISN position is very clear. We're not interested in going into electoral politics to get a heap of TVs elected, because we don't believe that's going to resolve anything. It's not possible to bring socialism from above, and it's not possible to make major change through the electoral system that exists in this country. However, in the course of struggle, in the course of real struggle, particularly within working class communities, you will find people calling on the everybody else in the movement, or whatever the movement, to in some way overturn the accepted local political leadership, whether they be TDs or councillors. And you know, to stand back from that can be seen very negatively by communities. When they want to get rid of councillors that they don't like, and they have people that they want to put forward to represent them in some sort of sense, or just to get rid of the old crowd, that has to be looked at. We can't just stand back and say, well, fuck this, you know. People do take that system seriously at the moment. We're not in a revolutionary situation. If we were in a revolutionary situation, I would say, you know, junk it. But right now, I think we do have to accept that there is it has a legitimacy that we can't really piss on, and
This podcast is a recording of the discussion at a meeting held at the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair on the 3rd of March on the topic of what sort of Ireland do we want. You can listen to the speeches that people are reacting to at www.wsm.ie.